Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and I have today on the show my friend, Alan Green. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Monique. This is fun.
It's very fun, and I am so excited that you're here. We've been talking about your father's work for about 8 years. Wow. I think it's been 8 or 9 years, and it's gone like that.
Yep.
We're here today to talk about your father's work, the book that you have produced about his work, which is amazing. And we really want to talk about your home and give listeners kind of an insight into this amazing architecture that your father designed. So why don't we start it off with the story of your father, his work with Frank Lloyd Wright, and also the projects that he worked on with Frank Lloyd Wright and with his own association. To start, I know he worked with Frank Lloyd Wright on 40 projects, and most widely known is the Marin Civic Center. But I wanted to have you share with our listeners the story of how he connected with Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah, that's sort of a fun story. But my father grew up in the South. He grew up in Florence, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And he had a friend there whose parents owned the local movie theater. So they hired my father when he was in high school to paint posters for the theater. In those days, the studios didn't send out posters like they do now. So my father had to, from photographs, letter and design and paint these. You know, these were like 12 feet high, these giant posters.
Oh my God.
So that's what he did when he was in high school. He was going to be an illustrator and a graphic designer. He went to Cooper Union in New York and was studying illustration, graphic design, but he ran across Frank Lloyd Wright's autobiography. And reading that convinced him right away to change and become an architect. And he wanted to be an architect just like Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes.
So the next thing that happened was his friends, the Rosenbaums in Florence, asked him to design a house for them. This was while he was still a student, so this became his student project. So he did design a house, and they put it out to bid. And, of course, like all architecturally designed houses, the bids were too high. Mm. So ended up, my father said, well, you know, if you really want this done right, you ought to get Mr. Wright to do it. Well, they said, you know, he's not going to want to do this little house in Florence, Alabama. And my dad said, well, let's write to him and find out.
Oh, wow.
So my dad wrote him a letter, and he said, sure. I'd be happy to design a house in little house in Florence, Alabama, but you got to stay and supervise the construction. So the house did get built. There was also an apprentice from Taliesin who came and worked with my father to get the house built. And after the house was built, my father did get an invitation to go to Taliesin as an apprentice, which of course is what he wanted the entire time. So that worked out perfectly for my father.
Mm. And I think that they complemented each other so well in working together. When I saw a lot of his work, I would see Frank Lloyd Wright in it, but I saw a softer approach. I saw maybe a more livable, more comfortable architecture from him, but just as bold and just as amazing as Frank Lloyd Wright's design. So I've been a fan ever since I was aware of the work. In 1951, he founded his own practice, the Aaron Green and Associates in San Francisco. And there are people that worked in that office that were just amazing fans of his as well. Jan Novi, who we are friends with, took over the practice. And he began doing more residential work. So, and we know a huge group that have become you know, ultimate fans of your father's work. There are people that get together and they have tours of these homes and, you know, have made it their passion to preserve the architecture and really love the architecture. I read that he was in the Air Force during World War II. And after the war, he moved to LA and he worked as an interior designer for Raymond Loewy. What was that process like for him? So he was getting a job in order to, you know, interior design, I'm sure, was the only job that he was getting at that time.
My understanding was that he was designing the interiors of department stores for Loewy. But mostly what he was doing was studying to get his architectural license at that time. That was a good way to, you know, to support himself while he was studying. And he did open a practice in Los Angeles once he got his license. But he had met my mother, who was from San Francisco. And, I mean, that story is sort of fun in itself, because there's a Frank Lloyd Wright family connection there, too.
Yes.
That my great-aunt Rose Pawson, she and her sister Gertrude used to spend, they lived in San Francisco, but they used to spend winters in Arizona, at least some of the winter, at the Biltmore. So they became friends of Mr. Wright and asked him to design a house. So he designed a house for my great-aunt Rose Pawson in, it's Scottsdale now, it used to be Phoenix. Mm-hmm. There was no Scottsdale in those days, that was the late 30s.
Right.
And at some point my mother went to see the almost finished house, and that's where she met my father, who as an apprentice was working on installing saguaro cacti around the house, and that's where they met. And my mother decided that she would show Aaron that she was interested, so she knitted him a sweater. So that shows how things have changed a little bit.
That's so cute.
I don't hear about that anymore, but anyway. So after my parents got married in 1947, my mother lived in Los Angeles with him for a while, and I think it was her influence that got my father to decide to move back to San Francisco and open his office there. So when he told Mr. Wright that he was going to open an office in San Francisco, Mr. Wright said, well, let's make that a joint office, because I have all these projects on the West Coast that are not really being overseen very well. And of course, my father was shocked and overjoyed and knew how to answer that question. So my father drew up a plan for interior remodeling of an office in San Francisco. And Mr. Wright made some comments and they built that and had a joint office from 1951 until Mr. Wright died in 59.
Mm. And I think he had, at any given time, maybe 12 people working in the office there.
That was probably the most. A lot of times there were only a handful, but if they got a big job, then they would you know, bump up the staff. Originally, he rented one floor and then rented the second floor out and had two floors with a bunch of drawing boards upstairs. They did have large group in there if they needed it.
Mm. And you mentioned you and your brother Frank watched him tirelessly work. So he was, from my understanding and from hearing your stories, he worked all the time because he couldn't think of anything else, and he was so obsessed over this design that it was just a part of him.
That's really all he wanted to do. He didn't have hobbies other than architecture and looking at buildings. He was very focused.
Yeah.
He was very focused. That's all he wanted to do.
Mm. So he would work all day. He would help his, he also had people, you know, like Jan and Apprentice and other people working for him. So he was answering questions, doing all of that work. And then you'd mentioned at night, he would then only have that free time to draw himself.
Yeah, yeah. He spent all day, you know, answering questions and phone calls. And then after everybody went home, he could finally design stuff.
Mm. So then that went on into the late evenings then,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Yep. And weekends.
Right.
So the house that I grew up in is in Los Altos. It actually was a piece of property that my grandparents had bought in 1919 and had a small craftsman-style home built on it with lots of huge redwood paneling that I remember. And my father designed a nice, big, sprawling addition to it. And what I remember was while that was being built, the masons were laying the flagstone walls, and my father had come home and not like it and tear it down. And he didn't do it. It wasn't done to his liking, and he'd redo the masonry. So he was pretty particular about that. And it was a nice sprawling house, but it was very unique in the area at that time. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a kid, I was the one that would give the tours when people would come over. They wanted to see the house, and you know, I would show them the under the floor storage for the suitcases and the way bathroom was designed to curl around so that the giant oak tree didn't have to be removed. Mm-hmm. And it was a great place to grow up.
Amazing. And I think you really respected your father's work, and you really looked up to it, and you really admired it, I think.
I did appreciate it, and I recognized that it was entirely different than going over to visit any of my other friends' houses. And they appreciated it, too.
Right. Well, how could you not? It's really, really iconic work. So he also taught as a lecturer and a critic at Stanford University of Architecture for 15 years. And in 2001, he became the first recipient of the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation Gold Medal. So his work was exceptional, and I think he really set the tone for architecture. Really, that modernist architecture, I mean, I think it's some of the best work that I've ever seen.
Oh, great, thank you.
And you have compiled a book. Let's get into the book. This book, for our listeners, is an 8-pound brick of amazing photography for your coffee table, actually. The compiling of all these photos and the information is stunning. And I know that took you, would that take you a couple of years?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. And what was that process like for you, creating this?
Well, that was certainly a labor of love, but at the same time, when I was teaching myself the InDesign program that I needed to do to make that book, because I'd never used that program before, so that probably is one reason it took so long. A lot of the photos were in the files, the office files, but we also got photos from photography collections, people that had done photography for House Beautiful and Sunset, and I can't remember what other magazines that mm-hmm. published my father's work. Mm-hmm. But of course, we had to get, even if we had those images, we had to get permission and get better images for those. But there are actually even some photos that my brother took when he was doing photography for my mm-hmm. father. I think the Otah House. In particular, my brother took a lot of those photos and some other houses, too. And actually, even a few of them, we went out and took new photos if the houses were still there and in good shape that we did, you know, because we wanted to have some current photos as well as all the old photos that were taken when the houses were first built.
That's right.
And, of course, there's a lot of things in the book of drawings of projects that weren't finished also. So obviously there's no photos of those unless there was a model. But there are a lot of projects in there which were never built, which, of course, are fascinating because nobody has ever seen those.
Right. And where can people get this book? I know they have a huge interest in seeing what was never designed.
Well, it's called Aaron Green, Organic Architecture Beyond Frank Lloyd Wright.
Okay.
And it's available... It's a $75 retail book available for probably $20 on Amazon.
Okay. I didn't realize it was $20. I have a copy already. I need to go get some for friends if it's only $20.
It's not very expensive on Amazon.
Oh, God. I wish I would have known. Now it's going to be sold out when we put
this out. No, I don't think so. There's still lots of them left.
Well, the photos that I love especially are the ones of your home that you are living in now. Can you give our listeners a description or an average day in the house and what you experience in that house?
Well, the house is interesting, first of all, because of its location. It's on a side of a ridge, side of a hill, on the edge of Anderson Valley in Mendocino County, out sort of between Philo and Elk. So you have a beautiful view of redwood forests and a ridge across the way. So, I mean, that's the number one thing, is pretty much any window you look out of, there's nothing but redwood forest. So that's the first thing. It was certainly designed for that spot. It takes advantage of the view and the hillside. But if you look at the plan, it's just two long rectangles. There's nothing unique about the plan. But when you get inside, that's where the angles come in. There's an atrium with a triangular skylight over it, and there is a sunken sort of conversation pit that's angular. So suddenly when you get inside, it's much more interesting architecturally. And there's a huge fireplace that was cast in one piece that's sort of the centerpiece of the house, which also heats that part of the house very well. And there's 16 by 16 virgin redwood posts holding up the rest of the ridge line.
Beautiful.
The light coming into that house is really quite amazing. And of course, depending on the weather, it can be quite dramatic when it's stormy up there, because it's quite exposed. But it's a lot of concrete blocks, so it's very solid.
Wow.
Doesn't move around in the wind.
Right.
And I just love being there.
That's amazing. The sunken living room, I remember in the Van Tamelen house, they have the sunken living room, which was just, you don't see that anymore. It's unbelievable. And these fireplaces, when I was at the Oda house in SoCal, this fireplace, we were standing in it. We stood in it. And yes, we were bending down a little bit, but two of us were standing in it. It was just a really great experience. And I love his work was big and it was really bold, but some of these homes he designed, like the one on Stanford campus, was very, very small. Can you tell us about the different designs and how he worked with the client? I remember going through that house, with Bettina. It was so small, but it was so beautiful. And the design was so pure, and we were all silent walking through. It was such a great experience. But can you share how your father worked with clients?
Well, I know that I filled out the same questionnaire that he gave to all residential clients, and it was several pages, even though, you know, he pretty well knew me already. You know, I was almost 50 when he designed this house, so he should have known me by then. But it had
he should have
but it had a lot of specifics, and although I didn't want to put limitations on the design, because sort of the point is to let him do something interesting, but I did have I told him things like I wanted, you know, minimal maintenance. I don't have to paint the darn house. Minimal maintenance, simple. Mostly one level. I don't know if I got to be in a wheelchair, I want to be able to move around. And, you know, other things, I wanted the sunken living room just because I thought that was cool, even though that's maybe not, you know, the style these days.
Oh, I think it's great.
But I liked that. And, he asked me about the kitchen. Well, I don't know anything about a kitchen. I don't cook. So I said, well, just make it like a normal kitchen, like a normal person would have. So... And I wanted, I'm just trying to remember some of the things. You know, I like to sleep late in the mornings. I didn't want the sun coming in. So I wanted to be facing, you know, east, away from the sun. And, you know, stuff like that. I like showers that have a window to the outside, so you can leave the shower open to the air. It doesn't get as moldy or something. I don't know. But
that's great.
And I had an office... with a drawing board, and you know, that was before the computer era. So he did what I wanted. And the interesting thing, and I think he told me that Frank Lloyd Wright did the same thing. He had this design bouncing around in his brain for months, actually probably even years. And then when he finally sat down to draw it, it was all done in his head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And he was probably so relieved just to get it out of his head and onto the paper.
Well, wow. I was.
Yeah.
I was, because all these damn paying clients kept getting in the way of my project.
Yeah. Like, hurry up. I'm amazed that from the photos that I've seen of your home, the wood angles and walking in. Can you share with us what it was like just to first walk into this house?
Well, I'd been walking in all during the construction. I was there almost every day. So that wasn't really a novel at that point. But I think when you're there, you really notice the attention to detail. Mm-hmm. I mean, the battens are triangular. Every light is covered by some sort of a covering, so you don't actually see the bulb. Some of those were custom made. Mm-hmm. I actually designed stained glass fixtures throughout the house. And I think you mentioned some of the smaller houses. That's when you really notice the attention to detail, because the house is so small. That's what's really amazing, is the very close attention to detail.
That's right. I mean, how was it when the home was finished and when you were spending your first week there? What was the experience like? What did it feel like for you?
That was 25 years ago. Well, you expect me to remember that?
We're going
to
go
Do we expect me to remember that?
If you can think back to that time and picture yourself there, what was that like?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not.
I'm no help.
You're no fun. Help. Well, I can imagine it being like how it was when I walked into this house, and just all the glass and seeing the light. And I sadly have never been to your house, but I'm sure if I walked in, I would not be able to have a word come out of my mouth.
Yeah, that house is quite dramatic. But I'd been in there every day. For the 2 years that it took to build it.
That's a good word, dramatic. So when I first saw the photos, and you can all see the photos when you buy the book on Amazon, the photos are stunning. And I didn't have any words. And being through a lot of his homes, I none of us had words. We were just quiet. So I understand that your father took your whole family to Taliesin West every Easter, which is wonderful. Can you share with us a time when that happened?
Yeah, that happened several years when I was young. Mr. Wright died in 59, so I remember going out there 2 or 3 years when he was still alive, but you know, I was little. I've actually got a picture I took of him when I was 7.
Oh,
not
wow.
A very good picture, but I still got it anyway.
Wow.
Well, what I really remember, the story goes like this. My father and Frank Lloyd Wright's office at 319 Grand Avenue, it's right on the corner of Chinatown in San Francisco. You go through that big gate on Grand Avenue, and you're in Chinatown. And my father and Mr. Wright used to go shopping for Asian art up there all the time, because they both liked that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. At some point, I think it was early 1959, my father found at Gump's a cast bronze dragon fountain that he thought Mr. and Mrs. Wright would like. He just thought they would like it. So he sent it to them in Arizona. Unfortunately, I think that was just before Mr. Wright died. But Mrs. Wright liked this dragon, but she thought if it was a dragon, it shouldn't be a fountain, it should breathe fire. So she had it mounted on this tall rock outside the drafting room, and hooked up to a propane tank so that it would actually breathe fire.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, that's what I remember from going out there when I was a kid, right? I mean, I was 8 or 9. And also, I remember the fire-breathing dragon. And
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, and it was very dramatic, and especially at night when they had night events, they would light this thing. Yeah. So eventually, when my father died in 2001, I wanted to do something in his honor. So my winery, we did a bottling with the dragon on it, because that's what I thought of when I thought of doing something for my father. And actually, that label was so popular that we abandoned our main label and put the dragon on everything.
That's so great.
Then I started the baseball team, and we became the Dragons.
Oh, my God, that's so great. What a way to remember him and remember that beautiful moment.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Alan, for being on this podcast. I'm honored to have you here. I'm honored to know other homeowners that love the architecture as much as I do. I'm so honored to know about your father's work. I'm so honored to have experienced being in the homes. And I hope that everyone listening is as inspired by this architecture as I am.
You're welcome, Monique. My pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.